What is the best place on the internet? The most sane, the most fact-based. Got an idea? Well, that is coming up this week on Download This Show. Plus, should you have the right to take your technology, your phone, your laptop, to whichever provider you want to get it fixed? Or is that process, in fact, standing in the way of innovation? Also, smart speakers, smart doorbells, smart TVs. You got a lot of smart things entering the household these days. But do you know when and if they're spying on you? All that much more coming up. This is your guide to the week in media, technology, and culture. My name is Mark Fennell, and welcome to Download This Show. Yes, indeed, it is a brand new episode of Download This Show. I am in here in studio with Nicholas Queck from the wider BBC Click family. Thank you for joining us again.
Thanks very much for having me.
Angha Radio from Good Game Spawn Point. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Mark Fennell continues to be my name. Hasn't stopped. Should you have the right to repair your devices? Firstly, actually, like conceptually, what is the right to repair, Nick?
The right to repair is a movement currently going on, which is about taking electronic goods, consumer goods, and having the right to repair them, funnily enough, if they start going wrong, as opposed to conventionally what's happened. Well, what's happened in the past is that tech companies and manufacturers have wanted you to go through their approved repair companies, which are governed by them usually, or they've said, no, don't touch the appliance or utility or whatever it is, because then it'll void the warranty on the product. So right to repair is trying to get rid of that in a way and making it more open and free for people to have a tinker with their goods. And also it's an effort to kind of crack down on landfill, which is where a lot of these appliances could be headed.
And this is an interesting point, right? Because like the number one sort of stick they use is if you do go off and repair something on your phone, not through their approved person, you void your warranty. And that's sort of the primary way in which they police this. But there are laws about this overseas that differ from ours.
Yeah, there are places, I believe it's Europe and the UK.
It is in Europe, right?
Is it in the UK?
Is in Europe.
Is the UK...
Are we seriously going to have Brexit?
It was kind of a joke, but now we're here.
It's in Europe. It was Brexit is about leaving the EU, the European Union.
Yeah.
Nick was like, I came to Australia. He came here to avoid conversations about Brexit.
I don't know how
I've literally come
works.
To the other side of the world to stop talking about this, and here we are.
So I think you're saying the UK, the EU, and the US
and the
all
US
have laws.
Have laws which basically state that you do have the right to repair. And Australia doesn't have the same kind of laws yet. However, the ACCC did do a lawsuit against Apple, within which Apple were fined $9 million for, doing this whole...
A lot of money for Apple.
Yeah.
A lot of money
However, did they struggle to make that
payment? I don't know. They've just been scraping for days.
How many geniuses is that? April. Sorry. Okay, so what was, in terms of the ACCC being the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, I get why they turned it into an acronym. When they won, like, what does that case law now dictate for the rest of us, I guess, is what I'm curious about.
It's a step towards basically saying that we do have the right to repair. It's a step towards saying that companies will hopefully eventually no longer be able to say you will void your warranty if you have it repaired, either by a third party or yourself. But I think that a really, like, it's a trickier issue than it sounds. It sounds quite clear that, yes, you know, it's avoiding landfill and it is opening up the market so that people don't have such a monopoly. It's opening up aftercare markets. It's also quite tricky, though, because it changes the technology that we have. For example, one of my favorite things that has started to happen in laptops, this is really nerdy, but they have...
I mean, if you can't do it here, where else are you going to do it?
They've started to directly solder RAM chips onto the motherboard rather than onto its own RAM chip that you...
Oh, you weren't kidding, were you?
No, I wasn't kidding.
Get into this.
Rather than soldering it onto its own motherboard, well, not motherboard, its own board that then slots into the motherboard. And what this means is that you get much, much slimmer laptops, and they also run more energy efficiently. They also theoretically produce less heat. And these are all really good things, except it is absolutely not possible to repair that by yourself. Mm. You can't upgrade it by yourself. It has extremely tiny solder points that even if you were a very skilled surgeon, I don't believe you could desolder and then resolder new chips on. So it changes how technology will be developed. that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's a hard thing.
This is one of the views of the, you know, consumer campaign groups, that basically they're saying that it could stifle innovation. And technology companies and manufacturers are saying this stifles innovation because they're not able to make these high-tech devices, which are not easily repairable by your average Joe and, you know, in his shed with his toolbox. You need to have specialist training and blah, 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 blah. It's quite at odds of how technology has evolved in our entire history of the universe, because we're looking at constantly better and smarter ways to do things and make devices that are smaller and more powerful and more efficient. We're not talking about making makeshift things in a garage. That's one of the arguments. So whilst there are products and devices out there which can be easily repaired, such as modular phones, like Dutch company Fairphone have a device where the phone is modular and things, parts and components can be swapped out. You can upgrade your camera. But that's at odds on how traditionally, I guess, innovation has happened. I mean, every new iPhone, every new Samsung phone, every new Android has a better and more compactness happening to its technology. And that doesn't make any sense. It's having more compactness.
Yes. You know what happened? We mentioned Brexit. It triggered you. And
I'm absolutely spiraling.
I take it back.
I mean, so we talk about this in terms of like, these things become more and more sophisticated to the point that old mate with his shed can't do it. But we're not always talking about old mate with his shed. Sometimes we're talking about a competitive industry of people that can repair things at a high level that will charge for it.
Yeah.
Why should we be stopping that business from it continuing? Like, if that business is capable of opening up the blackest of boxes and understanding it and fixing it and adding new boards to the motherboard, by the way, did not know the difference between those two things, should not be hosting a technology show. Why wouldn't, like, if a company can do that without damaging the product, why would that?
They want a monopoly, I think.
Yeah, the tech companies that then manufacture the goods don't have ownership over that repair process. They might not want to reveal what's inside their devices for IP purposes. They might want to be able to have control and therefore tell you, well, this thing isn't working. Maybe you should have this thing. Mm. I know in the case of Apple, if you go into their store, I've been there before, and you can say,
you
oh, there's something.
That's the important
thing. You can say, oh, there's something not working right with my Mac. And just have a new Mac. Mm. Like, they can easily just swap it out.
I do love that. You go in, just look like a sad consumer. I've tried being an angry consumer at Apple. Does not work. You go in, be a sad, I love your products. It's just really, And then they just give you one. It's amazing. Try it. Just be sad.
Because it's you.
No. Who the hell? Who am I? I'm some dude on the radio. They don't know what I look like.
No, but then on the other hand, you might see it as, well, if manufacturers have complete oversight of that repair process, then if anything goes wrong otherwise, then it doesn't look bad to their brand and their devices. Mm. If you got it repaired theoretically by a unapproved repair company, and then your phone went bust after a week, then you say, oh, you start blaming the company, not necessarily the dodgy repair.
I don't mind companies wanting you to go through them, although it doesn't always give you better service. For example, I've had to get a phone repaired once and was told by the manufacturer, it'll take 2 weeks for us to take the phone, assess it. If we decide that it is something that's under warranty, we'll repair it. If not, you'll be charged $40, and then you can choose whether or not to pay the extra on top to repair it or just have it sent back to you. So basically, send us your phone for 2 weeks. We'll charge you $40 to tell you whether or not we'll repair it.
What the?
And I'm like, that is not happening. That is ridiculous.
I have so many problems with that, but chief among them, without my phone for 2 weeks.
Exactly. And I'm like,
who are you going to call?
They couldn't even make the assessment in store. They couldn't even like look at it and say, yeah, this is a warranty thing.
That's bonkers.
Yeah. So I do like the way that opening it up allows more competition that's going to hopefully provide better service. But at the same time, I think maybe there's just a better opportunity for, if control isn't given away, for companies to just have better service themselves, maybe.
Another thing to think about is also, you know, well, a huge factor in this is the environment. So if we can repair our kit and our gadgets at home, then we won't need to buy new ones, which create huge CO2 emissions in their manufacturing process. Mm. And therefore, we don't need to, you know, keep buying other devices and then throwing other ones in the bin, which ends up in landfill. But then Sorry, Raj, you look, you're weaving.
No, I'm so sorry.
What you missed by not being in the room here is that when Rad has a thought, like there's no one within a 10K radius that didn't realise you needed to make a thought. Your arms start gesticulating like an octopus that's flapping. Just had a bunch of MDMA.
I'm trying really hard to be good.
You are good. You are brilliant, but it's just very funny when you have a thought that you want to convey. Carry on.
High energy.
High energy octopus.
What I wanted to say, something that came to mind when you were speaking, is if you didn't notice, is that
interesting?
I love tinkering with tech. I know as much as I do about computers because I've repaired my own laptops. I've built computers. I've repaired my own phones back when they weren't unibody, and I wasn't terrified of possibly cracking everything by opening it.
Mm-hmm.
You lose a lot of that interactivity and knowledge, which can help people, for example, learn things like I did and now be talking about tech. And I think that it's a shame if we become unable to interact with these things that we use all the time. You can say the same thing about cars. Cars used to be much more mechanical. Now they're very computer-based and people don't necessarily know how to repair them.
Good point. Well made, MDMA Octopus. Mark Fennell is my name. That brilliant voice you just heard there is Anka Radio. She is from Good Game Spawn Point. We're also in studio here with Nick Queck and... Legend speaks of a place, a magical place, where instead of awfulness, information reigns supreme. This magical place
is Twitter.
No!
Oh!
You are the deceiver. Magical place is Wikipedia. A fascinating article that I came across, and I think it's worth engaging with, hence why it's in the show, is this idea that Wikipedia may in fact be the last best place on the internet. Now, Wikipedia has not been without problems over the years. There are issues with representation. There's a certain demographic of person that ends up being a Wikipedia editor. But it is, comparative to the rest of the internet, a place where facts, verifiable facts, derived through processes, written by people, does seem to live. So let us debate the concept. Discuss, if you will, that Wikipedia is the last best place on the internet. Because I know the MDMA Octopus will have this. I'm going to stop calling you that. Mostly because
I
feel like...
I'm a children's presenter.
Consider this an opportunity for a rebrand. Nick, you may have the floor first.
Thank you very much indeed. So Wikipedia, it's a funny one because Wikipedia, obviously, back in the day, was seen as an absolute joke, a place where you couldn't get any good information. It was full of misinformation, which was written by people that are not academics, people that are not professionals. It's just simply amateurs at home on their couches filling out stuff about posts that they don't even know about, whatever, right? All of those rubbish that no one should ever cite or look into research.
Way too well.
Whereas, Adam's currently in therapy. The problem is that Wikipedia, as time has gone on, not the problem, the light at the end of the tunnel, I should say, for Wikipedia, is as time has gone on, it's now become more and more a place where people can go for correct information and a source for knowledge that isn't constantly full of opinion or tweets or claims that are unfounded. It's a place where people can go and then you can see, I want to say fact in quotation marks, and then have a citation for that, you know, find the source of where that information came from. It's also a place where information is depersonalized, and so things are presented more as fact, almost like an academic journal. It's trying to be the encyclopedia of the internet.
I think that's a really important point, that I think that depersonalization is one of the keystones to why Wikipedia works, because no one's getting famous. No one's getting really popular. No one's trying to win the woke Olympics and
apart
get lots of
from
retweets.
Steve Pruitt, the man behind one third of all Wikipedia posts,
what?
Who lives with his folks
what?
In the US.
What?
Yes.
But the whats say that no one knows who that is.
But I want to. Tell me more about
Wikipedia this person. Wizard. Steve Pruitt has...
Wait, so when I did the whole there's a land thing, it's actually, this whole thing's become very Dungeons and Dragons.
No, yeah. Steve Pruitt, he's written a third of all, he's edited a third of all Wikipedia articles, and he does it because he absolutely loves it, and he spends up to 3 hours every day just at home at his computer. He lives with his folks in Virginia. He's, you know, a young dude, and he basically has authored one third of Wikipedia.
I mean, if it weren't considered in politic in this day of corona, I would hug this man.
I want to meet him. We should get him on.
We should get him on. Okay, well, I mean, but it does raise an issue, and I think I alluded to it earlier, where traditionally there has been some demographic issues with people that do edit Wikipedia. I remember we did a couple of years ago a story where it seemed like there were certain sort of like topics that one would associate with the interests of men, basically.
The whole tech sector.
Yeah, often had very kind of filled out pages, whereas things that were perceived to be more feminine, I mean, in a spectrum of perception, often were underpopulated. Mm-hmm. And I guess I know they went through a lot of work to try and recruit more people outside the core demographic. Do we feel like in the years that that has happened, do we feel like it's improved?
Well, apparently one of the big barriers of entry is one of the barriers of entry that always exist in these types of spaces, which is essentially trolling. So there is also a Wikipedia community that talk to each other, and that tends to be the people that really love editing Wikipedia and really into it and really involved. They talk on their own forum, and apparently I'm not a part of it myself. It is a place where trolling and kind of belittling of women can be a bit more prevalent, which then obviously would push them out of the community and out of being as involved.
Yeah, I think the other thing to bear in mind is that it's all volunteers that are doing these articles. So if you've got, you know, 85% of editors on Wikipedia are male, if you have 85% of them, if you have all these males that just want to come on and do editing these articles, and you have 15% that are women are coming on, then how do you really balance out? It's not like a traditional tech company where you would just call up your HR director and tell them to employ more of the other sex.
Well, also, I'm just vaguely curious as to how they determine some of that data, because, like, so if you go to a Wikipedia article, there's a little tab you can click on, like the talk. That you go over to the edit page and you look at the talk button, you can kind of see the ongoing discussion that's happened with an entry. And
that's what Wikipedia says.
Yeah. Well, I guess the reason I don't have a Wikipedia account, but the people I know that do, they've never had to put in their demographic. So I assume there's been some research that's done to arrive at that, because it's not certainly something you tell them when you sign up to with an account. As far as I'm aware, it's been a while since.
They just track your IP and then look at your Facebook. And I'm just kidding. That's a joke. Well, that was a joke.
No, it's funny though, because they do check. I mean, they in an effort to keep track of who changes what, they do actually track your IP. I mean, whether or not they care enough to check the other stuff, I would hope not. Well, given how desperately they ask for money every 2 months, I'm assuming they don't have, like...
They'll do door knocks soon.
Yeah.
You access Wikipedia this many times, you don't want to give us, like, $2?
Of all the things I pay for on the internet, Wikipedia's probably one of the things I feel like I most should pay for, even though there's a bunch of inaccuracies on my page, just putting it out there.
Why don't you go fix it?
Oh, I don't want to fix my own Wikipedia page.
Why? You know best about you. I'll fix it for you.
No.
I'll add in some nice things.
No, you've got to stay. You've got to stay unbiased, like, here. That's, you know, your mark will be too partial.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, obviously, I don't. As a principle, I don't think somebody should change their own Wikipedia page. I do sometimes. Look, I'm not on my Wikipedia page a lot.
It's just but humble brag.
Are you directing listeners to your Wikipedia page?
No,
right,
no. It's just there.
Let's
are some
edit Mark's page.
Listen to the MDMA octopus. There are some things that are just like factually out of date, like things I've done that are, I'm not going to focus on this very long, I promise. But there are some things where it's like, it says that I'm still working on shows that have ended. And I was thinking about it the other day, it's like, yeah, I could go on, but I don't, like, philosophically, I feel like it's the wrong thing for me to do and go on and change it. But at the same time, even if I wanted to, you'd have to point to, like, documentary evidence that something had been axed or it had ended, or, you know, so-and-so was not in charge of a show. And actually some of that material to refer back to doesn't exist. I know it because I happen to make those shows and podcasts and whatnot.
Well, I
you
see
don't
an
have to cite everything,
here.
Though.
Don't you?
No.
You can, Steve will intervene and say, you need to put a citation in here.
But then it just says citation needed. We've all seen that on Wiki.
We now know what you're going to be
are
doing
you
for the next 2 weeks.
Well, I'm just trying to work out
are you looking yourself up on Wikipedia right now, Mark?
I'm trying to find the thing that was wrong. Yes. I no longer do produce technology reports for ABC News 24, including News Exchange, not a show anymore, The Drum, Weekend Breakfast, and The Technology Quarter, not a show anymore. There you go. If somebody wants to go on and change that, by all means.
I love how you're slagging off Wikipedia's lack of timeliness and its updating. I mean, if you look at an Encyclopedia Britannica, then you're not going to say, oh, look at that book. It had information that's not changed
in
the past few months.
This has become more navel-gazing than my narcissism will allow for. Let's move on. Download This Show is what you're listening to. It is your guide to the week in media, technology and culture. Did we decide whether Wikipedia was the best place on the internet or not? I can't remember.
I think it's nice.
It's written by people who are not paid for their work. There's no advertising on the platform. It's a place where opinion, well, very obvious opinion is kind of
whittled out.
Yeah. So I think it's also good
because it's iterative, and it's kind of that thing about having a diverse team in your own workspaces. You technically have access to almost the entire world to put their two cents in, and that can, yeah, as we said, kind of help whittle out opinion and try to make it a little bit more factual. Obviously, it does still have a lot of issues, but I think in the grand scheme of the internet, it is moving more towards good than a lot of other major sites.
Download this show is what you're listening to. By the way, that's we solved it, and I'm so sorry for bringing my Wikipedia entry into the mix. I now just realized
we talked about your page more than anything else.
I really want to see this page now. I need to look you up on Wikipedia.
Bad that I did that, and I'm a bad presenter. Anyway, moving on. Is your house spying on you? Well, if you happen to own a smart device, probably. So the question is, if you're not super comfortable with all of the smart technology that you may be acquiring or about to get for your birthday or Christmas, how do you control where that data goes and make it a smart decision for yourself about what data you're putting out in the world and what data you're just hoarding, hanging on to? So of the devices that live in my house, what do you reckon is the one that is leeching the most data off me?
Microwave. 100% smart microwaves. They're out to get
you. But who has smart microwaves? I can't.
They know how many times you're ordering Domino's. I tell you.
Why does it know that?
Smart microwaves have cameras in them.
It could be the case.
I took you seriously, and that was my mistake that I shan't be making again.
However, smart microwaves do have cameras in it that like analyze what you're eating.
Oh, what for calorie content purposes?
All sorts of stuff.
Is it quietly judging me?
Yeah, probably.
I don't know if you two are making fun of me right now.
No, this is a very vulnerable spot
because I gave...
No, when people think about smart home appliances, they might think about a thermostat. They might think about a smart speaker like an Amazon Alexa Echo device or a Google Home. But really, nowadays, things are so connected. You've got light bulbs that are smart. You've got fridges. You've got... I once saw a bath, which was a smart bath. Ooh. That you could talk to remotely. You could get your bath running.
So when you come home,
you know, you could get in the bath. And it'll be nice and cozy for you. Get the champagne chilled in your fridge.
How was your day?
Exactly.
Hold on. Tell me.
No, this
is true. I'm suddenly very interested in this bath thing.
Yeah. It's a very expensive bath.
How much?
Extremely. I think it was about 30. It's £30,000. It's about $60,000.
And so what? It senses me coming down the street. It fills itself
up. You control it via your app, via an app remotely, and you can run your bath. You can tell it to chill the champagne because it's got an inbuilt champagne fridge.
Fine, of course it does.
And it's got a telly.
Doesn't yours?
I mean, I'm just talking about my everyday routine, guys. I don't know why this is.
We're a very strange group of people. I mean, I think the reason I was interested in talking about this is in part because we've seen a real rise of smart doors and smart doorbells and locks that will let people do deliveries and inside. And I think, understandably, that is something that sets off like a bunch of alarms.
I was in the age
you're on like this weirdly like well-behaved thing. Don't stop being you.
In the age that we're buying more and more stuff online, we're getting deliveries sent to our home address. It's not just stuff that we're purchasing online, like gadgets.
Drones are coming into our backyards.
Exactly. It's like groceries. There are more and more of a reason for people to have these devices that can monitor and for people to come and deliver goods or monitor who's delivered stuff to their house, make sure it's really them. But at the same time as the rise of the popularity in these smart doorbells, has been, there's also potential security issues here. And, you know, there have been hacks to very mainstream devices, won't name names, which you can hack into and you can actually fool your smart doorbell to see it so that it looks like no one's actually there when there could be a burglar breaking into your house. So those hacks have been done. Companies then catching wind of this have then changed it and updated their software to allow these bugs not to take place. But like all bits of tech, they are open to online attacks.
I think also like not all, but most bits of tech, it's not necessary at all, but it's so much fun. Oh my gosh, it's so much fun. And I want it so badly, but...
She's back, ladies and gentlemen.
She's back. Hold on.
We cowed her for like 6 minutes, but she's back.
I really, really do love technology and I love smart home technology. But yeah, absolutely. If you even get a Wi-Fi enabled light bulb, yeah. it is possible to hack those and then get access to your network. It sounds ridiculous, but we don't consider that enough, I guess.
It's been interesting just, I guess, working in the space for about a decade now and seeing how smart home appliances and gadgets have gotten so popular, and people now have pretty much every person's got a smart device in their house, not to mention their smartphone that they carry on them all the time, which has got a camera and a microphone. And it's crazy to think that people still don't know at this day and age that these things could be open to hacks, that they could be watched, they could be being listened into. A lot of people don't know that they're, you know, smart speakers like their Echo devices or their Google Home devices, that they, you know, are constantly on and constantly listening, that every one of their requests is recorded and sent to either Amazon or Google, and you can actually listen back to them, which is hilarious, by the way, which
really?
I recommend you do.
What do you have
so
to
tonight,
say?
Tonight, when you go home, you can go into your settings in your either your Amazon or your Google account, and you can listen back to all the different requests that you've made to your relevant smart speaker.
Is it weird?
Yeah, it's super weird, because you can hear people in the background talking about something else, because that's the thing, like if you're in your kitchen or whatever with one of these devices, your wife might be off talking to someone else, whatever, and you can hear them in the background, and you can hear about how ridiculous you sound when you're talking to a smart speaker as opposed to an everyday human.
How easy is it to control your data, like with any of these services? Can you log on and go, hey, stop listening to me?
These usually do have some settings that you should at the very least be familiar with. I think an important point is a lot of people start using these devices without having any understanding of them whatsoever. They basically know how to install it because they follow the instructions. They struggle to even do that, but then they have them in their home and they're using them without understanding much about them. And I think information and learning about them is a really big part. So get really familiar with the settings. Most will have some options to protect your privacy.
You can tell Alexa or Google to delete your last comments, questions, or conversations, so they can delete those. And also, there are a couple of researchers at the University of Chicago that have developed a wearable wristband, which uses ultrasonic sound to scramble any listening at microphones in the immediate
vicinity. Just in case you weren't sure that Nicholas was actually Scottish.
I'm going to get one of these wristbands so no one can hear what we're saying.
I also do want to just point out that the best way to protect yourself is just not getting one of these devices. There have also been instances of companies...
It's very much like coronavirus in that sense.
Yes, there's instances of companies not deleting the data when they've been told to.
But it's hard to know in this day and age which devices are smart as well. Like, a lot of people might not realise that the telly that they buy these days is analysing and watching and listening to them for voice activation, or that their fridge or their washing machine might have some sort of smart setting.
And with that, we are out of time, possibly all time for guests in studio. And the next time you hear Download This Show, we'll all be in different corners of...
We'll just type to each other and then Mark will read it out in different voices.
And then Yo said this and then Nick,
who's
oh my God,
that?
Nick
who's
said that? This and it was amazing. Yeah, it'll be like that, only much less annoying. No, more annoying. Very big thank you to Nick Quek for coming back on the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Mark.
Very big thank you to Angharad Yo.
Thank you. You
can catch Angharad on Good Game Spawn Point on ABC Me, and I'll catch you on the next episode of Download This Show.